Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I hope you're all doing well. I was asked to talk this morning about why it's important that we believe, and I wasn't too sure what to talk about. I got to have great conversations with lots of friends about why it's important to them, what they believe, and came up with a very long list of things, and thankfully I'm going to spare you of talking about everything that was on that list. But before I get started, here's what I want you to do. You're going to turn to someone close to you, and you're going to talk about what is something someone would need to know about you if they were going to live with you. So this could be funny quirks, this could be things that maybe you're uptight about, strange habits that you have, maybe you have a couple obsessive compulsions. But the rule for this is, you can't talk about this with someone who you already live with, because that wouldn't be very much fun. So, someone that you don't live with, what would they need to know if they were going to live with you? Okay, I'm going to give you about 10 more seconds. Now, taking a look at the expressions on your faces, I assume there was some great stuff that came out of that. I was having a tough time coming up with my own answer, and I asked Joanna, my wife, and she knew like that, she had an answer. She didn't have to think about it. She said, well, you sing in the shower, and I thought, that's not that weird. She said, really, really loud, which I didn't necessarily know, and something I've discovered living with her that she's told me about is that I kind of, without meaning to, make guitar noises with my mouth a lot of the time. I'm just kind of like singing songs, but it's just a guitar thing, and I'm definitely not going to do that for you this morning, but those are weird things that Joanna has learned living with me. But what we're going to look at this morning is if we are going to do life with God, what are the things about God that we need to know if we're going to make this work? And kind of that's basically what theology is. That's basically what it means to study the Bible, is figuring out what do we need to know about God to figure out kind of the nitty-gritty details of what life can look like. So this is what we're going to talk about this morning. Why is it important that we believe? Because it affects how we get to talk to God. It affects how we get to share God with others, and how we get to view the world. And I'm also going to take just a little bit of time to talk about ice cream, because ice cream is a good thing to talk about. And we're doing pretty good for time right now in terms of the whole service. Depending on how time goes at the end, maybe I'll see if anybody has any interesting questions or comments or things that you want to share. I don't know if that'll work or if it'll be a horrible, awkward mess, but if time's going well, we'll give it a shot. So maybe as I'm talking, you can think through what are things you'd like to respond to, maybe questions that you have. Okay. So let's take a look here. This passage that to me is very frightening about what it looks like to do life with God. From the book of James, it says, what good is it, my brothers and sisters, if people claim to have faith but have no deeds? Can such faith save them? Suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm and well fed, but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, if it is not accompanied by action, is dead. But someone will say, you have faith, I have deeds. Show me your faith without deeds, and I'll show you my faith by what I do. You believe that there's one God? Good for you. Even demons believe that and shudder. This is a really scary passage to me. And I think that what it says is that believing in God is more than just a box that you can check off. It's not this simple thing where you just say, yeah, I believe in God, and that's the end of the day. Because even Satan believes that there's a God. But I think what we take from this is that it actually can look like something. In our daily lives, in the in and out, and the nitty-gritty, believing in God actually looks like something, and it actually matters. And for James in particular, it looks like taking care of people in really practical ways. And I think that it affects how we do family. It affects how we act as employees. It affects how we act as parents and as neighbors and as citizens of Kelowna and as citizens of the world. This can look like something. But in order for us to know what that actually looks like, it's important to know what we believe about what God is really like. Important to know who we believe is the God that we're following. And you know, the amazing thing about God is that through all of this, God is constantly the initiator. God is the pursuer. God is the one who comes to us on our terms and reveals himself to us. And our job in that is to respond. God initiates, we respond. It's a little bit like saying yes to a marriage proposal. It's this lifelong response. It's living in reaction to being loved and being cared for and being valued. And because of that, everything that we learn about what life looks like is things we get to do. These are not things we have to do. These things are great privilege. Even when they seem like terrifying commands like we see in James, these are things we get to do. Because it's always better doing things God's way than how we would have done life on our own. Now, I want to talk about how we get to talk to God, because that's a great privilege. And I think in terms of any great conversation, it helps to know who it is that you're talking to. It helps to know who it is that you're chatting with. And it's the same thing for God with prayer. You need to know who you're talking to. And this has become really evident to me over about the past 6 months of my life. The past 6 months of my life, talking to God and life in general has felt pretty bad. It hasn't felt good, and it's been hard. And to be totally honest with you, I am not the most spiritual person to begin with. I am totally okay with owning up to that. I'm just not a natural prayer. It doesn't come naturally to me. I kind of have to put a system in to do it. And it's good when I do, but over the last 6 months, my prayer life really dropped off. And there was lots of frustration that was going on. In particular, over the last 6 months, I was struggling pretty hard to find work. And I wound up doing some manual labor jobs that I really hated. Another thing about living with me is I am not a handy person. So that was definitely not a comfortable job for me to be in. And basically the frustration with work and with life was really affecting my prayer life and how I was thinking about God. And I found that I was pretty mad at God as I was going through this process. I was disappointed, really, that life and life for my family wasn't working out better. And I can remember a day where I hit a point where I just gave up hope that things were going to get better. You know, as Christians, we're called to hope. I remember thinking, I don't think this is going to happen. I don't think I'm going to find a job that I like. I don't think that I'm going to find a job that can help us pay the bills. And it really didn't feel like things were going to get better. And I started wondering, like, if God is actually real and I see God claiming that he takes care of us, what is that actually supposed to look like? Like, if God is someone who's in control and takes care of us, shouldn't I see that as I'm searching for jobs? Shouldn't I see that in this day-to-day as we don't know how we're going to be able to pay bills? And it was interesting because as I was feeling that, and in particular, feeling very scared to feel that, feeling very scared to admit that out loud, particularly when I was going through it, I started looking through the Psalms because it felt like a good place to look. And I was struck because I noticed that in a lot of the Psalms, the writer not only felt some of those same things that I was feeling, but was actually willing to pray them and to yell them and to think them and to feel them with God. In fact, not only in terms of individual prayer, we see this in terms of corporate prayer. Some of the Psalms were written for Israel as they would worship together. And they would express those feelings together, sometimes of feeling abandoned and of wondering, where is God in all of this? And it did this thing for my prayer life where I started to feel okay with expressing that I was let down. And I started thinking, God, I need you to show up, and I need you to show up soon. You got to do something about this. And in a lot of ways, that felt like a pretty arrogant posture to hold towards God. And looking back, I think it probably was. But it was amazing to see that in the Psalms, sometimes we see that kind of attitude. So I want to show you this psalm that was a bit of a turning point for me. And this psalm is to the lead player, a David psalm. How long, O Lord, will you forget me always? How long hide your face from me? How long shall I cast about for counsel, sorrow in my heart all day? How long will the enemy loom over me? Regard, answer me, Lord my God. Light up my eyes, lest I sleep death. Lest my enemies say I prevailed over them. Lest my foes exult when I stumble. And here's this great turning point. But I, in your kindness, do trust. My heart exults in your rescue. Let me sing to the Lord, for he requited me. It's important to know what you believe about God, because it's important to know that God is there, and you can be mad at God, and you can hold disappointment up to God, and God can take all of that. And it's amazing seeing that God actually prefers that over pretending that life is okay and that we have everything under control. God finds that honesty really valuable. Because pretending that everything is okay has never driven anyone to prayer. In fact, going through that was the only thing that really got my prayer life in shape, because it really drove me to the point where I felt like I desperately needed God to act. It's never helped someone experience the get-to of being real with God to fake that life is okay. And the amazing thing is, and I can say this now looking back, is that when my prayer was at its angriest, when it was at its most frustrated and its most demanding, I started to recognize that God was at work, and in fact had been at work through all of that. And it's easy to see now that, of course, God was providing for us as a family. And, you know, as cliched as it can sound, sometimes going through those tough things help you recognize it. And I started feeling like I had reason to hope that things were going to get better. And in fact, things did get better. In ways that I can totally look back and say, wow, that was God in control, that was not me. Things got better, and it was amazing to go through. Now, I don't want to leave you guys with the impression that prayer is about throwing a temper tantrum so that we can manipulate God into getting what we want. Prayer is not that. But prayer is certainly a place where we can be real. And understanding who God is gives us the freedom to do that. Okay, the next thing I want to talk about, why what we believe matters. This remote doesn't work as well as I'd hoped. One of the places where it matters is how we get to share God with others. I don't know if you guys have experienced this, but sometimes in our world, Christianity doesn't feel like good news. We call it gospel, but sometimes that can be a scary thing to talk to people about. But I firmly believe, and having had the privilege of doing paid ministry and working with teenagers, I firmly believe that if people could see Christ for who he really is, they would fall in love with him. They would absolutely fall in love with Christ. Unfortunately, there's all kinds of messiness going on in people's lives. There's hurt that's come from church and family and life and letdowns that gets in the way of people seeing Christ for who he really is. There's these walls that go up. But in spite of that, we have great news to share. And that goes beyond any guilt or duty that maybe you've experienced if you've grown up in a church context. We have excellent news to share. And here's a little analogy for you. I want you to picture that one day you're walking downtown Kelowna. It's sunny out. The weather is beautiful. Yeah, there aren't too many tourists out. Everything is just right. And while you're walking on Bernard, you notice a new ice cream shop that you haven't seen before. And you think, I'm going to go in there and check out this ice cream shop. And you walk in, and there's an elderly gentleman working at the counter. He's even got one of those little white hats that you see in old-timey ice cream shops. And you're looking at the amazing display of ice cream that they have. And one thing that you notice about the store is they actually don't have the prices listed anywhere. So you say to this fellow working the counter, how much is ice cream here? And he says, oh, it's free. Wow, is this something that you guys have on for the weekend? Or no, this is how we do business. Ice cream here is free. Always free. As much as you want, it's free. If I encountered that situation, there are two things that I would do. The first thing I would do is eat one of everything that they had. Two of the things that I really liked. The second thing that I would do is I would pull out my cell phone and call everyone that I knew and say, you gotta come down here. Somebody's giving away free ice cream. Let's do this. That is the gospel. That is the good news that we have to share with people. God is giving away free love and full life. And that is not something that we should just keep to ourselves. That is something that we should want to share with people. That being said, I know that that can be awkward. I think we live in a culture that has set that up to be an awkward conversation. We aren't supposed to talk about religion, we aren't supposed to talk about politics, we aren't supposed to talk about money. And it can feel weird bringing up the G word, talking about God. But I don't think it has to be awkward. And here's a little bit of theology to show you why. This is why I don't think it has to be awkward. We're going to take a look at, in this role, of sharing Christ with people, what is God's job and what is our job? The first thing that is God's job is convicting people of sin. God is the one who makes people aware of the fact that something is missing, the fact that life should be better, and the fact that they need help because there's something broken in their lives. That's God's job. God's next job? Drawing people to himself. God is the one who makes people fall in love with him. God is the one who makes people desire relationship with him. That is one of the roles of God through the Holy Spirit. God's third job in evangelism is to sanctify people. As people begin that process of relationship with him, it's God's job to transform people, to shape them to look like him, to make their love look like Christ's love. That is God's job. I am so glad those are not my job. Those sound like hard jobs. My job, our job, love people. That's on our side of the ledger. To make this look like something in real life, that's our responsibility as a church and as individuals. Pray for people. Also our job. It is your job to pray about people that you care about, people that you haven't met yet, people that you want to love better. That's your responsibility. Our last job, present the gospel clearly. This is one of the reasons it matters that we know what we believe and why we believe, because we want to know the little details of what God is really like so that when we tell people about him, we're telling them what he's actually like. Now take a look at those jobs. God gets the hard ones. We get the really fun and exciting ones. I like this setup. I think evangelism gets more awkward and more scary than it actually is when we think that some of God's jobs are our jobs. It isn't your job to make people recognize that they're broken. You can't do that. Trying to do that over and over is nagging, and that's not helpful for evangelism. You can't make people fall in love with God, which is a little scary, probably especially for parents, but that is God's job. And in fact, it's not my duty or responsibility, and I can watch God do it. It's also not our job to sanctify people. It's not my job to make people perfect. I can't do that. Trying to do that makes me a naggy and annoying person, so I'm not even going to try. My job is to love people, pray for people, and present the gospel clearly. Now, in all of that, the amazing thing about evangelism is that we have the great privilege to get to of doing it the same way that God does it, in that God does evangelism relationally. God does evangelism through relationship. The great news is that that means we don't have to feel like people that we're caring for are just projects. The only thing that we care about isn't whether or not one day they respond, because the relationship in and of itself matters. The act of getting to know people, caring about their lives, that is deeply important and spiritual work. People aren't projects that we're ministering to. We actually get to care about what's going on in their lives. We actually get to, and in fact, if we're going to be successful at evangelism, we need to care about what they think of the world, what they think of God and spirituality, before we can ever get to share what we think. Evangelism always starts with listening, because great relationships always start with listening. The other thing I think about how we do evangelism, and this is so key, and this took me a while to figure out, is just keep it light. If you treat talking about God as a deep and very serious and important conversation, then it's going to be a very deep and important, serious conversation. If you can figure out how to do that in a casual way where people feel comfortable talking, that is a very powerful tool. And in fact, if you can see that people are freaked out by that conversation, you can talk about something else. You can talk about sports. You can talk about TV. Because it's not your job to draw people to God. You're just going to present the gospel clearly when you have the opportunity. Knowing who God is and how he goes about loving people will deeply affect how we do the same thing. Now, if we just center all of that in prayer, the great news is that we aren't even responsible for the results. How's that? Could you imagine if that was how things worked at your job? Oh, you're just going to try and however things turn out, that's okay. That's the setup that we get with God. We aren't responsible for the results of how people respond. We love them. We pray for them. The rest is up to God. Okay. I want to talk about one last thing of why it matters what we believe. Because this is going to shape how we get to view the world. Now, recently, we just went through an election. And I think something that I've heard from so many people is that we're so thankful that we don't have a minority government anymore. We're so thankful that there's not going to be another election in 8 months. Now, I want to be clear, I'm not taking political sides here. But imagine if what we experienced after an election was more than just relief. Imagine if after an election, we felt a strong and surging sense of hope. Picture if we had wild and unabashed hope for what was going to happen. Imagine if everyone couldn't stop thinking and talking about what was going to change now that this new party was in place, of all the different ways that things were going to get better. Imagine if that's what we were so excited about, what this new person in charge of things was going to do to put things right. That's kind of what our attitude is to be towards Christ's kingdom. Take a look at this passage from Ephesians. It says, I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened in order that you may know the hope to which he has called you, the riches of his glorious inheritance in his holy people, and his incomparably great power for those who believe. That power is the same as the mighty strength he exerted when he raised Christ from the dead and seated him at the right hand in the heavenly realms, far above all rule and authority, power and dominion, and every name that is invoked, not only in the present age, but in the one to come. This is the kind of ruling authority that God has. It is over everything. God is in charge of absolutely everything. Now, it's important that we know what God's party platforms are. It's important that we know what God's campaign is about, because you get called to be a part of that team. You and I and all of us together get to be the people who, now that God is in charge, we get to make these new things real. All these party platforms, we're going to actually be involved on the ground level, making them real, making them concrete, changing the world, changing our communities. That's one of our jobs. That's something that we get to do. So, together, let's have a really strong sense of what God is about, of what God thinks is important in the world. And there's lots of room within that to debate, to talk things through about what's the best way to handle schools, what's the best way to handle families. There's room for debate. But we can all partner together to make God's rule a concrete reality in each of those spheres of life. Okay. God placed all things under his feet and appointed him to be head over everything for the church, which is his body, the fullness that fills everything in every way. So, why is it important what we believe? We get to talk to God. That is an amazing get to. And knowing who we're talking to will shape that. It's important to know what we believe because that's going to affect how we share this good news of God with other people. And it's important to know what we believe because it's going to shape how we view the world and all the potential and hope that's wrapped up in that. In all of this, we're called and we get to take part in a bunch of get-tos. We're called to a life of significance over a life of comfort. That's a get-to. We are called to a life of doing God's important work over our life's urgent work. That is a get-to. We are called into real and authentic conversation with God through the ups and downs of our life. That is a get to. We are involved of God's work of going out, telling people about him, helping them experience his love, and through the details of that, changing the world. That is a get to. So here's something for you to think about in terms of working out the details of these things. One question is, what do you want to accomplish in the next year? 12-month plan, could be big, could be little, but what's something that you want to accomplish that this has got you thinking about? Next, what do you want your belief to affect? Are there spheres of your life where you want to see this actually make an impact if you haven't seen the changes that you've seen so far? What do you want this belief to affect? And third, where do you want this to matter the most? It could be family, it could be work, it could be a whole ton of things. But where do you want this to matter the most? Okay, let's pray together. Father, thank you that you do reveal yourself to us. Thank you that as we look closer and closer at who you are, we can be more encouraged and excited, and we don't need to shy away from that, Lord. And Father, I admit that I don't often do the work of seeing the details of this affect things. But God, we want to put that in your hands, and we want to see you doing big things in our lives and in our communities over the next year and beyond. Help us to have the eyes to see what you're really like and the work that you are already doing in our lives and in the lives around us. And God, we want to get in on that. Thanks that we get to be a part of what you're doing. Amen. We're doing pretty good for time, so I'm going to see if anyone has any questions or anything they want to add or any comments. And, you know, we're all adults here. It's okay if no one has any. It won't feel too awkward. Ah.
I just want to say you're right on. You hit the nail on the head. I think we get into real trouble when we confuse our role and God's role and we start trying to do God's role.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah.
You've been using the word spirituality and religion, and that's good the way you have done it. And we can, and the world does, ban religion.
Mm. Thank you. Yeah, and just by thinking through some of that language that we use, by using spirituality, that's a great way to gain inroads with people who've been hurt by religion. That's a great way to be able to start a conversation with maybe someone who wouldn't want anything to do with church, but would be willing to maybe talk about Christian spirituality. Thanks. Okay, I'm going to be around after the service. If you want to talk, I'd love to chat. I'm going to invite the worship team back up, and we're going to sing again. Thanks.